Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Theodore Jerome Cohen. He is the author of a newly published book, House of Cards, Dead Men Tell No Tales. Ted holds 3 degrees in the physical sciences from the University of Wisconsin-Madison and has been an engineer and scientist for more than 40 years. He has been an investor for more than 50 years and most recently has focused on investigating and reporting on the corruption in U.S. financial institutions and agency of the U.S. government. His new novel, and the one that we're going to be discussing today, is based on real events related to the 2008 financial crisis precipitated by the housing bubble. Hi, Ted.
Oh, hi. How are you?
I'm good. It's sure fun to be talking to you again. And this is what your, which book is this, number five, number six?
Number six.
This will be the lucky one. You're a very prolific writer. I guess there's something to be said about retirement, huh?
I never retired, and frankly, I did not intend to write this one. I, it's one of these things where you wake up one morning and you go to the computer and you just start writing.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
The inspiration is just there.
Well, the inspiration was sure there for this one.
That's great.
It occurred on while I was Susan and I were out on the left coast over in Seattle. And it had to do with something I read in the newspaper.
You know, isn't it great that, and there you're just telling me something, that you were reading a newspaper and obviously it was a headline or a story or something, and it just triggered a story from that, a fiction story based on real life, obviously. So tell me about what this article that you read or the headline that triggered.
Well, the story, the book, the book, of course, is called A House of Cards,
mm-hmm.
Dead Men Tell No Tales, and it's based on the 2008 financial collapse in the United States, and of course it spread worldwide. And what actually got me thinking was something that was said, believe it or not, during the Academy Awards on February 28th, 2011, where, if you remember, Charles Ferguson, who's a director,
mm-hmm.
Had one best documentary feature called Inside Job. And in his acceptance speech, he said, "Forgive me, I must start by pointing out that 3 years after our horrific financial crisis caused by massive fraud, not a single financial executive has gone to jail, and that's wrong." And I got to thinking, and of course, one of my earlier books, Death by Wall Street, took up fraud and the failure of the Securities and Exchange Commission. And listening to Ferguson that night got me thinking, here we are 2.5 years afterwards, and nobody went to jail. And if you think back into the 90s when we had that terrible savings and loan fraud, you remember? Well over 1,000, I can't remember whether it was 1,300, 1,400 executives went to jail.
Yeah.
And nobody's gone. Nobody's gone to jail.
So,
Ted,
what do you think, what's your opinion on that? Why at one time all these executives had, ended up in jail, but now all of a sudden, how many years later, and this massive fraud, as you mentioned, but yet nobody goes to jail? What do you think the difference is?
I think the difference is that we have the best government that money can buy. I mean, I think that many of our agencies, and I'm talking about the Securities and Exchange Commission, and I'm talking about the Food and Drug Administration, have literally been compromised by the industries that they're supposed to oversee. And if you take a look, for example, at the number of people in the Obama administration, and you can go back and look at the Bush administration and probably the Reagan administration and every other president. It's people by those who made contributions. And in the case of the Obama administration, you can Google Obama administration and Goldman Sachs, and you will turn up a list, I don't know, 20 or 30 people in the administration who are from Goldman Sachs and are now or have worked in the Obama administration. So I don't think that there is, I don't think the administration has the heart to pursue these people. And, of course, the Securities and Exchange Commission is just a revolving door. I think these people spend half their time in the Securities and Exchange Commission tweaking their resumes for their next job on Wall Street. And if you, for example, had listened to Harry Markopoulos, who was the man who for 10 years went to the Securities and Exchange Commission and said, this guy, Bernie Madoff, is running a Ponzi scheme. It took me 5 minutes to figure it out. What the hell are you doing? And they didn't get it. And the reason was that this revolving door, the SEC was basically captured. And when he testified before the Senate and they asked him the same question, why didn't the Securities and Exchange Commission pick up the fact that Madoff was running a Ponzi scheme? He said, they're a captured agency. And so I think that for example, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder just really doesn't have the stomach for going after Wall Street, or at least didn't, maybe until earlier this year when Senator Levin was holding hearings back in April, and he was the it's actually a subcommittee, and he was just furious last year that the Securities and Exchange Commission settled with Goldman Sachs for a mere $500 million for what at that time was considered their double dealing in the mortgage market, that they basically were selling what are called collateralized debt obligations to their clients. At the same time, they were betting on the failure of these instruments. In other words, they were going short in the market. And the Securities and Exchange Commission settled with them for $500 million, which is really, I mean, that's coffee money for Goldman Sachs. And Eric Holder did nothing, and he didn't go after any of the others who were selling these really toxic CDOs, as they are called, and we can talk about those a little bit, why they were so bad and why they finally caused the entire economy almost to go in the toilet. In fact, they have, and we're paying for it now. But in any event, Senator Levin just went crazy in April and held hearings, and then he issued a report in May, and finally in June, they went back and they accused Goldman Sachs. A prosecutor in New York subpoenaed Goldman Sachs for information related to the financial crisis, and I think that's still turning through the courts, because what they did was basically saying that Goldman Sachs was playing both sides of the house. They were selling these toxic, so-called toxic CDOs to clients. At the same time, they were betting that they were going to fail. So I'm reading these stories in April, May, and June after listening to this director at the Academy Award, and it just made me furious that the United States government was doing nothing, and nobody has gone to jail. And I finally just woke up one morning and, as I did in my book Death by Wall Street, I sort of decide to make my characters judge, jury, and executioner, and I decided I would write another novel, and I just sat down and started writing.
Yeah. That's great. That's great. Well, you had mentioned mortgages, and I just want to talk to you a little bit about the no-doc loans that were just so readily available at some point. And I know that you have some opinion on that, and so let's just kind of discuss that.
Well, yes. I mean, going way back, and it's certainly before Obama and even before Bush, you can go back into the Clinton years and before that, Bush 41, and probably even before that. I mean, next to the automobile, home ownership is something that's near and dear to everybody in America. And I guess they really started pushing it during the Clinton years when they just decided that they would make everybody and his brother a homeowner. And the banking industry created all these different types of loans, no-doc loans, of course, meaning no documentation, interest-only loans, teaser rates. It was just amazing the hoops that the banks were jumping through to get people to buy homes. And I mean, I've heard, and I'm sure the stories were apocryphal, of women who cleaned homes, who held mortgages on three homes. And I'm sure that all of us heard stories where somebody bought a home and 2 months later flipped it and bought another one, or they got a mortgage and 2 months later they got one at a cheaper rate. And I mean, people were flipping homes like you and I, you know, used to flip burgers when we were teenagers. So, I mean, it's just, it was just an amazing time. And the state of Georgia, to its credit, started to see what was happening. It started to see, and this goes back during the Clinton years, just to show you, that a lot of the loans, home loans, were very low quality. In other words, the person taking out the loan really didn't have the wherewithal to service the loan. And so they tried to put some controls on the banks in Georgia to increase the improve the quality of the mortgages in that state. And they were sued by the federal government and prevented from doing that. And so what you had happen was the quality of the loans in the marketplace started going down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you have, what happens to these loans is that they're bundled into bonds. And then these bonds are rated by the rating agencies, S&P and Moody's and Fitch. And then furthermore, you take a bunch of these bonds and you package those into collateralized debt obligations. I mean, it's just, and these are what the banks were selling. Now, S&P and Moody's and Fitch really weren't paying attention to the quality of the basic mortgages in these debt instruments that the banks were selling, these CDOs. And so there was a lot of junk in them. But as long as people were paying their mortgages, everything was fine, because the people who bought the CDOs, they were getting their interest, because the interest came from the mortgage payments. But then, if you remember, beginning in about early 2006, the housing market peaked, and the value of property started going down. People started going underwater with their mortgages, the last people in. People started, there were foreclosures, and the market really started tanking in 2007. And people started walking away from their homes, and it got really bad in 2008. And now a lot of these collateralized debt obligations, the underlying mortgages failed. And this is where the whole thing came unglued. And a few people saw what was happening, and they saw it early. They saw it a couple of years early, and they went to AIG. And they said, and AIG is an insurance company. And they said, we want to buy insurance to protect us against the failure of the mortgage industry. And AIG sold them insurance to protect them against the failure of the mortgage industry. And when the mortgage industry failed, AIG had to pay out, and that's why AIG failed. And that's when the government had to step in, if you remember, at the end of 2008, near the end of the Bush administration.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And just throw hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars at Wall Street to keep it afloat. And the travesty is that unlike the situation with General Motors and other, now Ford didn't take any money, if I recall, Chrysler did, where they outed the management, they didn't exact any conditions from Wall Street. They didn't give the head of Goldman Sachs his walking papers or anybody else. And so what happened? So the banks got all this money, and the too big to fail didn't fail. They didn't lend any money out, which is why we were having the problems that we're having now. They got their bonuses, which is nice. But they used the money, they used our tax money to speculate, which is what drove up the cost of commodities. And that's why we ended up paying close to $5 for a gallon of gasoline. It was all this speculation in the market because of all the money that was floating around, but the banks weren't loaning any money out. I mean, it was just a disaster of the first magnitude. And, of course, nobody went to jail.
Yeah, and that's the bottom line, isn't
that's
it?
That is the bottom line.
Yeah.
So this is the story that's the basis of the new book. This is what's behind the new book. And so, as I say, I tend to become the judge, jury, and executioner. And in the first chapter of the new book, I have a banker assassinated.
Well, that's a good way to start now.
That's a good start.
Was this based on reality?
No. It's just my way of handling the situation. It's pure fiction. Any resemblance to people living or dead is purely coincidental, but it just made me feel a lot better.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. Join us and hear both well-known and upcoming writers talking candidly about their life experience as well as the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, we strive to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are available 24/7 through Direct Podcast, as well as MP3 download for your convenience. Please visit us on InsideScoopLive.com. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with Theodore Jerome Cohen, author of House of Cards, Dead Men Tell No Tales. Well, as you can see so far, Ted is very, very well versed on the financial situation of our country and how it got to this point. So stay tuned, because there's just going to be so much more from Ted. So in your story, who actually did kill him, or is that something that readers have to read to find out?
Well, I don't want to spoil it.
Okay.
I don't want to spoil it for the reader, but I will tell you this, that in the tease for the book, and it's right on the back cover, the question that is raised in the tease, did the banksters kill him? In other words, did other bankers kill him for some reason that may become apparent?
Mm-hmm.
Or did Islamic terrorists kill him?
Oh.
So there's the element there that there may be more to the story than just the financial collapse of 2008.
So let's talk about these Islamic terrorists.
Uh-huh.
And what's all that about?
Well,
is there some reality on this?
Yes, there's some reality
okay.
to that. And if you recall, again, in Death by Wall Street, the story behind Death by Wall Street was the manipulation of a biotech company by Big Pharma and problems within the FDA having to do with the approval of the revolutionary drug. The story was based on a true story that was an expose by Mark Mitchell on the Deep Capture website that had to do with Dendreon Corporation and their development of Provenge for prostate cancer. And I worked with Mark on that story as I served as a private investigator for him and basically provided support to him for 4 months during the spring of 2009, and he began publishing at the end of I think it was the end of May, beginning of June of 2009. And he is doing a story now about the influence of Islamic terrorists on the United States financial system and their impact on the U.S. financial system, which is what gave me the idea of bringing in Islamic terrorism into this story. So... That's why I brought it in.
Well, this all just sounds to me like one big tangled web of stuff that actually, you know, as I'm listening to what you're talking about and, you know, the basis of your book, and so it's like it's so based on reality that I'm sure that readers can just, you know, it's also educational because it sounds like what you've incorporated is a lot of what things, you know, really did happen.
Well, it is.
And why? Yeah.
It is. One of the reviewers said that it would, and obviously I've given early copies out for reviewers, that it is one of these ripped from the headline books.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is, but I had a lot of fun writing it. I actually, this is the second time that I've used this character, this detective in New York, and the woman who helps him from the information technology desk in Police Plaza 1. And I sat at the computer sometimes and just laughed at the exchanges between them.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's kind of cocky at times to the point where it's almost like Pulp Fiction, the old Pulp Fiction books. One reviewer said he's kind of cool and cocky in a way that you used to find. So I just have a laugh at times about the exchanges. It was just a lot of fun to write, but there is a lot of serious things going on in the background that does make it a rip from the headlines kind of thing, because it's very definitely, I mean, you will find references in there to Ben Bernanke, the chairman of the U.S. Fed, and Paulson, and things that went on in 2008. It's quite immediate in many respects.
So, I'm just thinking here that you said you used a couple characters from another book. is this actually a standalone book, or, you know, does it really flow from the other book that you had just written?
It's completely standalone.
It's standalone. Okay,
it
but just the characters,
yeah.
Couple characters. Okay.
I did put in enough information that it is standalone, and people will understand immediately who the characters are and their backgrounds, so that even if they haven't read Death by Wall Street, they won't be missing anything as to why Detective Martelli, for example, walks with a limp, and what his relationship is to Missy Dugan, who's his IT person, or Alexa Lindsay Bouvet, who's his financial analyst, forensic analyst. So, I mean, all of these characters are basically reintroduced, so you could read House of Cards and never touch Death by Wall Street, and you wouldn't miss a thing.
Wouldn't miss a thing.
Except a good read, maybe.
I was going to say, you know, once people are enjoyed this one, they may want to go and read the other one, because although it is standalone, it definitely is an interesting read, and very timely as well, too.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I will say this, that the House of Cards is extremely accurate in every respect. And I was criticized in my early novels because I put in footnotes, you'll remember.
Mm-hmm.
And some readers didn't like the footnotes. But my background is a research scientist. And when I first started writing, I felt, well, almost an obligation to say, okay, where did I get this fact, or where did I get that fact? And some readers found it disruptive. And so I finally decided, okay, I'll put the facts in, but just to satisfy myself, I will make sure that what's in the book is correct. And so, for example, I mean, something as mundane as a body that floats in on the tide, in House of Cards, the place where it floats in and the time it floats in and the date it floats in is accurate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if somebody were to take that date that's in the book and go to the tide chart in New York Harbor, they will find that the information in the book is accurate to the minute.
And
it's just me.
Well, and that's important. It really is, especially when a book like yours that is based on so many real facts, that even though fiction, the readers do expect some reality in that too. And like you say, you know, the timing of the tides. And some people may not even care, but others that do will really appreciate that. Ted, what is your website address?
Oh, it's very simple. It's www.theodore-cohen-novels.com.
Okay, so it's theodore-cohen-novels.com.
Right.
Great. And there you go, listeners. House of Cards, Dead Men Tell No Tales. And I'm sure that you will find that Ted probably himself didn't tell too many tales, but really, as we had talked earlier, that he really based a lot of the story on reality. And as you have heard so far, he's very knowledgeable on what's really going on in the financial industry. So, listeners, check this out. Again, it's House of Cards, Dead Men Tell No Tales. Ted, thank you very much. Is there anything you'd like to say to our listeners before we close?
No, I hope they enjoy the book. They can communicate with me through my website if they have questions or comments. I answer all.
Yes, you do. And that's one thing about you as an author. You do really communicate with your readers, and that's so important. So there you go, listeners. Do check out, again, as I said, it's House of Cards, Dead Men Tell No Tales by Theodore Jerome Cohen. And this is Irene Watson for Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.